On my podcast, I'm going to be talking about the relationship between Indigenous language and power, focusing specifically on the Guarani language spoken in Paraguay. I will be looking into how the Indigenous language and its perception has been used to strengthen national identity, to prop up political regimes, and to mask inequality. Indigenous languages are widely spoken across Latin America, but they don't always have equal standing with European languages such as Spanish, Portuguese, English. The majority of indigenous people in Latin America speak another language, but in Paraguay, the majority of the population, non-indigenous speakers included, speak an indigenous language. Guarani, the indigenous language, is actually in the constitution as an official language alongside Spanish, but the two are not necessarily seen as equal. From shaping national identity to propping up political regimes to increasing inequality, Guarani has been an incredibly powerful tool in Paraguay. Paraguay is a great example to look at when analyzing interaction between two languages because it has two official languages, Guarani, the indigenous language, and Spanish, as I've mentioned before. Aside from being an official language, Guarani is incredibly widely spoken across the country. Almost 80% of the population speaks some form of it. It's spoken by people in both rural and urban areas, as well as members of all socioeconomic classes. How did Guarani survive to become so widely spoken? So a huge factor in the survival of Guarani was the presence of Jesuit and Franciscan missionaries in the late 16th century. They actually created mission villages known as reducciones, where Guarani was the dominant language. The Jesuits even created a written form of the language and made it the only official language in their provinces. This, along with other factors such as the geographic isolation of Paraguay, the large amounts of mestizaje within the population, resulted in a lot of people speaking it and leading to the prominence the language has today. So Guarani survived. But why does that matter? The incredible preservation of the language and the widespread use of it makes it even easier to see the effects of language on power. In the early years of Paraguay, the status of Guarani fluctuated greatly. José Gaspar de Francia, the first president of the country, promoted Guarani to unite the country and establish his dictatorship. The next dictator, Carlos Antonio López, did the opposite and promoted Spanish because he thought it would help modernize Paraguay and he considered Guarani barbaric. For a long time, through different wars and political regimes, the indigenous language fluctuated between being promoted or suppressed, depending on who was in charge. In the 1920s, there was a reawakening of Paraguayan nationalism. This was closely associated with revived interest in Guarani. In the beginning, this renewed interest was largely limited to intellectuals and artists, like the composer and the creator of the Guarani melody, José Asunción Flores. But it soon began making its way into political spheres. The Colorado Party, wanting to differentiate itself from the ruling Liberal Party, began to promote itself and its politicians as the party of Paraguayan nationalism. In an effort to portray a sense of unity and social inclusivity within the country, Guarani became a very valuable tool. Linguistic homogeneity was supposedly equivalent to social homogeneity. They began to push the message, rich and poor alike, we're all the same because we all speak Guarani. This message of implied equality was actually just a way to protect the elite from criticism. This rhetoric helped Alfredo Stroessner come to power in 1954. Through the promotion of Guarani, his regime preached social unity, which hid the increasing inequality in the country. Under Stroessner, some rural Guarani speakers were rewarded for their loyalty with land, but for the most part, inequality increased. The government distributed a lot of land, and it was overwhelmingly given to members of the elite. But again, while this was not unnoticed, the message of a unified Paraguay, the Guarani language being an incredibly important part of that rhetoric, made it easier for those in power to do things like this without being called out. The new constitution, created in 1967, made Paraguay a bilingual country for the first time. But the two languages were still not of equal status. Guarani was made a national language, while Spanish was the language designated for use in official business. So Spanish was still more highly regarded than Guarani, despite the country being bilingual. Although the government and elites promoted Guarani as integral to Paraguayan identity, the indigenous language was still regarded as the language of the poor. Despite Guarani being marketed as an equalizer, speakers of the indigenous languages were punished. Porfirio Orrego Invernici, a language activist, remembers having to kneel on jagged salt and maize granules for entire mornings just for speaking Guarani in the classroom. Others were deprived of food, humiliated by being forced to wear diapers, or beaten for speaking the indigenous language. School children were openly persecuted for the use of the language. Simply speaking an indigenous language in school subjected students to humiliation and torture and singled them out in front of their classmates and friends. This type of treatment lasted until the end of Stroessner's rule in 1989. In 1992, a new constitution was written, and both Spanish and Guarani were established as official languages of Paraguay. Both the villainization and promotion of the Guarani language have been leading factors in inequality. Because of the perception of the indigenous language as the language of the poor, monolingual Guarani speakers tended to keep their mouths shut on important issues. This is because they fear being made fun of. There is a bilingual education program in the country, but it's severely underfunded and does not reach all the way through the country, leading many rural monolingual Guarani students to drop out of school because they're being taught exclusively in Spanish. So the language spoken by people has a huge impact on their education and their quality of life. Also, as I mentioned earlier, the language was used as a way to create a sense of unity, which covered up the rising inequality. Through rhetoric promoting the Guarani language as an integral part of Paraguayan identity, the elites were able to create a false sense of unity. This allowed for unequal conditions to remain as they were, and actually for the gaps between social classes to widen, without the elite getting blamed. Despite Guarani being used as a tool of suppression, it has been making a comeback. It's still really useful for politicians. But now it's not a tool to suppress the people. The people are holding politicians accountable. Guarani is still the language of the people. It always has been. But now when politicians don't speak the indigenous language, they face scrutiny. It may even cost them the election, as was the case with Santiago Peña. Voters painted him as an elitist because he did not speak Guarani, leading him to fail to secure his party's nomination for the presidential election. It's not just Paraguay where indigenous language has an impact on life. Throughout Latin America, indigenous languages can affect society. One example would be speakers of Maya languages. These languages have a large impact on social and political issues and can be used to mark community boundaries. Maya language, as well as clothing, can be considered a point of contention because it can be seen as being in direct contrast with Ladino culture. There are languages spoken all across Latin America that are incredibly important to the communities that they're spoken in. Language is very powerful. It's not just a way to communicate. It can be a way to subdue the masses, and a way to rise to power. The different languages spoken across Latin America are an incredibly important part of the culture and have played a crucial role in shaping the region. Sources for this podcast include the work of Walter E. Little, Hiroshi Ito, Simon Romero, Robert Andrew Nixon, and Donna Lee Van Cott.